Good morning, Carborough and Chapel Hill. This is WILP's Wake Up Call. WILP stands for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're here every Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock with the important news of the day, and a lot of times the underlying news of the day, what is really going on beyond the headlines. Our guest today is William Thorpe, a friend that we're in solidarity with the NAACP, and he is chair of the political committee. And last night, William hosted or was the facilitator for a forum for those who were running in our county for the county commissioners and for sheriff. Good morning, William.
Good morning. Good morning to you and all your listeners, and just thankful for the opportunity to get the message out in terms of the activities that we're involved with to make the Orange County and North Carolina and America a much better place in which to live.
Okay, well, I know we have a pretty full agenda. You may have to come back again, but let's get started.
Sure. First of all, last night, just to let you know, as chair of the political committee of the local branch, Chapel Carborough branch of the NAACP, I moderated a candidates forum for the Orange County Sheriff's Office and for the county commissioner's race. And so we want to let the community know that on May 4th, we have a primary election.
Yes.
And there were two candidates in the race for sheriff, and they were we had them on first. And that's Clarence Burkhead. He's a Hillsborough police chief, former chief now. He resigned his post just recently to devote all of his energies toward competing against incumbent Lindy Pendergrass, who's been there for 28 years now. So that's the in the Democratic Party's race. Also, last night at the forum that was held at the Chapel Town Hall, we had the at-large county commissioner's race, and we have three candidates vying for that seat. And they are two challengers to incumbent Barry Jacobs. We have Carborough Alderman Joe Hall Brown, and that's a challenging. And we have Joe Phelps, who's the former mayor of Hillsborough. So we had an interesting discussion, talked about a variety of issues that affect the people of Orange County. And certainly as the campaign develops, we got about a month to go, but we only have a couple of weeks to go until early voting. So you can start voting early. But it's very important that people understand who their elected representatives are and what they feel about the vital issues that affect our community. And so one thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of what I do at the as chair of the political committee is also talk about the importance of voting. So often as you go out into in the community, people say, oh man, I don't believe in voting, you know, or just take such a lackadaisical attitude, just very nonchalant about voting. But if you understand what it represents in terms of your just daily life, I mean, if you believe in Social Security, if you believe in Medicaid, Medicare, trash collections, parks and rec, police protection, fire protection, if you believe in these types of things, you believe in voting. You believe in health care, then you believe in voting. You believe in Pell Grants and student loans, and you believe in voting. So much of our life on a daily basis is impacted by the decisions that we make at the ballot box. But if you don't mind, Laura, I want to talk a little bit about the history briefly of the NAACP and what it represents for us as an organization in our community and in our country. Most people may not realize it, but the NAACP is the largest and it's the oldest civil rights organization. And the NAACP has done more to change life for the better for people of color, for women and young people than any other organization in the history of the United States. And if we go back, the actual founding of the NAACP, official founding date, was 1909. But it actually got started a few years prior to that. And about the turn of the century, there were a lot of racial problems in terms of black voter disenfranchisement. And that's how the NAACP got started. There were, you had the Remington race riot in 1898. You had the race riot in Springfield, Illinois in 1908. And so there were a lot of violence, a lot of voter disenfranchisement for African Americans, the former slaves coming out of that whole era. And we get, I mean, we really don't have time to get into that. I wish we did. We could devote a whole show on that. But that's how the NAACP was started.
And this is your 100th birthday.
And yeah, this, well, last year was actually the official 100th birthday, but we're into the 101 year.
Now I'm still up to celebrating.
That's what. Yeah, it's good. But the whole thrust of the NAACP is about political and economic and social and educational equality, and the NAACP really got strong in terms of filing lawsuits through litigation and legislation. It has done more for in the past and continues to do to this day for many disenfranchised and downtrodden, poor and powerless people, and to provide the type of uplift in just ensuring our constitutional rights. So it's always really been a constitutional issue. You know, are we included in we the people of the United States? Are we going to be a part of that a more perfect union that the Constitution talks about? So the thing that we know, we wasn't part of the Constitution when it was originally signed by the Founding Fathers September 17th, 1787, but we had to work to make America more inclusive. We had to work to make upward social mobility apart for all of the American society.
And William, I just want to mention, my understanding is that from the very beginning, the NAACP has welcomed whites. It has wanted to be in solidarity with those who want to make this a better America, that our group, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, has long been in solidarity with the NAACP, and especially locally. Many of us are members and are proud to be members of the NAACP as well as WILP.
And that's a fact that needs to get out to the community.
Yes.
NAACP is not a black organization. Mm-hmm. NAACP is a multiracial, multi-issue organization.
Exactly.
And always has been since its founding. In fact, the Jewish community was very instrumental in the early days of the NAACP. But you can even go back to the abolitionist movement and
that's
William
right.
Lloyd Garrison. There were always white people that were helpful for the freedom struggle because they saw it as something that was in the best interest of America.
Exactly.
And one of the things that even in the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, white people had a great role to play in terms of organizing. And one of the things I want to say, in fact, there was a white woman by the name of Viola Lueso.
I remember that.
Viola Lueso was probably more instrumental in helping to get the voting rights legislation of 1965 signed more than any other individual.
Really?
Yes, she was. So if we had time, I'll go ahead and tell you the story about Viola Lueso, because I want to go ahead and talk about this whole issue of that the freedom struggle and civil rights movement has never been a black movement, that whites had tremendous involvement. Viola Lueso was a white mother from Detroit, and she heard the call from Dr. King to come down to Selma, Alabama to be part of a march from Selma, Alabama to the State House in Montgomery. And she just came as a volunteer. Now, people don't realize that voting rights march in 1965, that Congressman Lewis, that's a part of now, he was part of as a student for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. That was a movement because of a black man, a church deacon, Jimmy Lee Jackson, 26-year-old, was killed by Alabama state troopers. So he was killed trying to exercise his right to vote. So when he was killed in 1965, Martin Luther King and others in the South wanted to rally the nation, and it called the nation to this attention of voting rights. And so a march was held from Selma, Alabama, to the capital, Montgomery. Viola Lueso, she was a volunteer, and she was on the way of transporting workers, marchers back from the march from Montgomery. And a group of Klansmen had literally pulled up beside her vehicle and blew her brains out at point blank range. And this, more so than the death of Jimmy Lee Jackson, a black man, captured the nation. And so this was in March of 1965. Lyndon Johnson, the president, signed the Voting Rights Act, ensuring that there would be no discrimination in terms of voter rights irregularities that was happening in the South on August 6, 1965. But he signed it in ink. But Viola Lueso really signed it with her blood. And not only Viola Lueso, Reverend James Reed. If you go into the history, Reverend a white minister, all of these people were called by...
He was Unitarian, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there were many whites that died and sacrificed.
But it's sad that her life counted for more than the blacks. But it does take us in solidarity together to get it.
Yeah, and so we never forget those that, you know, risked their lives in this struggle. And so it's always been a struggle, and we have to continue to recognize those people that have stood.
So this is part of the background of the NAACP. Throughout, we were having a brief run through the history, but 100 years and 101 years now, and the 101 year of this struggle, because America is always what we're working towards, the vision and the promise of America.
Right.
And you're in the struggle right now.
Exactly. One of the things I want to talk about is we talk about this history. We talked, you know, a little bit about the history of NAACP and the fight for voter enfranchisement.
Yes.
And one of the things, if we talk about the founding period of the NAACP in 1909 and throughout the 19-teens and 20s and 30s, was dealing with many issues to include us as part of the legal process and ensuring our constitutional rights, because many of our rights were denied through the white primary, for example, poll taxes, grandfather clauses, legal literacy tests, voter validation. You know, you had to get validated to get voted prior to 1965. So you had situations in Alabama, for example, as late as 1965, there were counties that had 40%, 50%, and 60% black population, like Loudoun counties and Wilcox counties, and there was not one single black voter on the registration rolls. And one of the reasons why, because in order to register to vote, a voter had to be you had to be vouched by a registered voter. So if there were no black voters, how would a would-be black voter be able to get registered, because he had to be vouched by two registered voters?
Oh,
and so these were kind of methods and schemes that were used to deny our right to vote. But here's an interesting thing. We can't separate politics from the economy. And so in last night, I really want to get more into this issue in terms of economic development. As you very well know...
And last night, I just want to remind our listeners, was the... you're talking about the Commissioners Forum.
Yeah, the Commissioners Forum that we held last night.
People running for the one seat, three people. And by the way, I thought the questions that you had brought up from the audience were so substantial, but this is the one about economic development.
Exactly. In America today, the richest 1% of American families own 42% of the total wealth. Now, if we can even go further than that, the richest 10% own 72% of the total wealth. So that leaves 90% of the people with 28% of the total wealth.
Trying to fight for that piece of pie.
Right. Now, that's just personal wealth. Now, if we look at corporate stocks, bonds, business assets, we'll see that that is even more highly concentrated. The most affluent 2% of American families own more than 50% of all family-owned stock. Top 2% own over half of the corporate stock. So we know in America, this is America, this is a capitalistic country. We know that business and industry are privately owned. And so one of the things that I wanted to do, and we're going to do at the end of this month, and we hope your listeners will be involved, is we're going to convene a meeting of the directors and managers of some of our largest, most economically significant businesses right here in the Triangle area that have the influence to determine the decisions that will affect how our county and how our state will go. And so at the end of this month, we're trying to convene a meeting with the CEOs and CFOs of some of the major corporations because we want to have a vote on corporate policy. Now, we can, at the ballot box on in early voting, which begins on April 15th, we can have a vote on public policy, mm-hmm. but we also need to have a vote on corporate policy because we see how this concentration of wealth, I'll tell you what this really means when you talk about this highly concentrated wealth, top 2% mm-hmm. have over 50% of all the corporate stock. This means that the investment decisions, like when and where a factory or a store or an office will be built, the amount of jobs available to the people, mm-hmm. the nature of jobs available to the people, mm-hmm. will be decided by a small percentage mm-hmm. of the total population. So, I have a list of the companies right here in the Triangle areas
William,
that we need to get
before
to.
We get to that list, we're going to take a break.
All right.
We're going to have a station break because this is going to be really important, and I think this is Dr. King's unfinished business, the economic... thank you. I want to remind our listeners, which I should do at the beginning of the program, get out your pen or pencil and paper, because we always give you information that you can find out more about whatever our topic is on your own and deepen your understanding of it. So be ready, because after this station break, we're going to give you some important information. Okay. This is WILP's Wake Up Call. WILP is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we are so happy we are underwritten by the Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin. And we're so happy about that because we love that bookstore. It carries books that you can't get in the big box stores, a lot of political books, a lot of books about the culture, and they will, of course, order any book you want that they don't have in stock. But not only books, they are really a community resource center. You can go in there and find out all the things that are happening around town in the progressive community. So I encourage you to stop in, but if you can't, you can get more information at internationalistbooks.org. And I also want to let you know, if you're having trouble with your reception or one of your neighbors wants, you've told about us and wants to listen to us, you can stream us live at WCOMFM.org. And also, if you've missed any of our programs and would like to get some past programs, we have a website, and that is trianglewilp.org. And don't forget that P for Peace and Wilp. Okay, I want to get back to our guest, William Thorpe, who is the chair of the political committee of the NAACP. And we have been talking about a brief run through of a little of the history of the NAACP, but now we're talking about Dr. King's unfinished business, which he was moving into. Voting is one thing, but if you don't have economic opportunities, that doesn't help you very much if you can't feed yourself, if you can't shelter your family. So he was working with strikers in Memphis when he went there with the garbage workers.
Yeah, that movement in Memphis was really part of Dr. King's project that he was working on in 1968 called the Poor People's
Campaign.
And what it was a shift from the work in 64 and 1965 in dealing with voting rights and, of course, the public accommodations bill of that was part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So it was a shift of the civil rights movement to a civil rights movement,
yeah,
and focusing on economic justice.
Yes.
And this concentration of wealth, and the fact that at the time the government was mired in the Vietnam conflict, and billions of dollars were being expenditure, you know, to kill rice farmers in Southeast Asia. But at the same time, there were economic issues here in America that Dr. King wanted to galvanize. And one of the things in the scholars will look back at that time and say the reason why Dr. King was assassinated was because that he was organizing, you know, not just black folk, but it was poor whites in, you know, Appalachia. You know, he was organizing Indians, Latinos. So he was really trying to build a multiracial coalition and to bring that front and center to the nation's capital.
And that was a threat to the power structure.
Yeah.
And William, here we are today with a parallel situation. A lot of our country's wealth is being sucked out to Iraq and now to Afghanistan. And the concentration of wealth has gotten 10 times worse. It was always bad and now it's worse. And you're going to tell us some things we can do about that.
Exactly. And I want to get with, on this issue. And I tell you why, a couple of months ago, back in February, our state branch of the NAACP, we asked the governor to call for a special session of the General Assembly, a job summit, if you will, to deal with this massive unemployment rate in North Carolina. And just a couple of weeks ago, we got the latest data from the Employment Security Commission, and it said that in the month of February, the very month that we were asking the governor for this job summit, that the unemployment rate in North Carolina had reached an historic all-time high at 11.2%. That's the official unemployment rate, and we know it's double that because that just includes the people that are officially looking for work. And for African Americans, we know that it is triple the 11.2% in North Carolina. What that breaks down to is that there are over 510,000 North Carolinians right now that are out of work. And since the so-called Great Recession began in December of 2007 officially, we've lost in North Carolina 280,000 jobs, including 102,000 jobs in manufacturing alone. So we knew in February that it was time for a special session of the General Assembly to deal with this issue. So instead of waiting on the governor, waiting on the General Assembly, we at the NAACP and other organizations and allies, we have to have our own session. We need to go to the businesses, to the industries. And this is what I want to talk about as we deal with this unemployment rate and how can we be a part of those decisions, because it actually is not just state decisions, it's also corporate decisions, corporate policy. And because we have such high concentration of corporate stock ownership, we have to go to these corporations and say that we need to be able to sit at the table when these investment decisions are being made. Now let's just look at some of the top corporations that we would like to meet with, the directors and managers of some of these businesses right here in the Triangle area. We want to meet with banking companies, real estate firms, pharmaceutical companies, technology companies, major manufacturers, and I just call them out. We got Bank of America, Capital Bank, RBC Bank. If you look at the pharmaceutical companies, we have Posen, which is a pharmaceutical company headquartered in Chapel Hill. We have GlaxoSmithKline. Major companies, utility companies, of course, we know Duke Energy, Progress Energy. We have major manufacturers that have headquarters or significant base of operations in this area. The Sara Lee Corporation, Lance Incorporated, you know, the snack food company, mm-hmm. the potato chips and crackers, real estate companies, Highwood Properties, technology companies, Cisco Systems, Cree, the semiconductor manufacturer. So there's a list of about 15, 20 companies that we're going to be targeting and we're going to be meeting with. So we're going to be having some informal meetings. And this is really what the governor should be doing, this type of work. We're going to convene a meeting later this month in Chapel Hill, and we're going to give the information in just a minute for those that want to be a part of that. We're going to have a meeting with these top government officials so that they can co-mingle with their constituency, but also for the business leaders to meet with their consumers and with their shareholders. So we're going to have this meeting later on this month. The governor is a Chapel Hill resident. The Speaker of the North Carolina House, Hackney, is a Chapel Hill resident. Congressman Price is a Chapel Hill resident. So in Chapel Hill, we'll be putting together a forum, kind of a job summit, as we meet with the leaders of industry and talk about this issue of this high degree of concentration of wealth, and that we need to be a part of the investment decision. Many of these companies that I just mentioned, they have capital expenditures, outlays in the tens of hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of supply chain and information system initiatives. We need to be a part of those discussions, particularly considering the fact that so many of our people are out of work. So
we have just a couple minutes left, and I want to... this sounds like a wonderful idea, and I'm sure we want to find out more about it, and we'll be covering that for you. Sure. But when, how will people get in touch with you? Has the meeting time been set yet, or is that just still in progress?
We're still in progress. We will have a date certain by next week. We definitely want to do it at the end of the month, right before this primary election.
Right.
Too many people are suffering. There's so many issues that we have to deal with, and we're calling on all of our allies. One of the things, like we said, we're multiracial, a multi-issue group. We want to deal with the issue of living wage. We need to get our living wage activists, affordable housing activists, closing the education gap activists, peace activists.
So we want to get us all together for that. How do people get in touch with you?
The best way they can get in touch with me is to go online and hit me up on an email. My email address is BillThorpeGolfClassic@yahoo.com.
Bill Thorpe, that's small letters.
Yeah, all, you know, one word.
And they keep one word, golf?
Bill Thorpe Golf Classic.
Okay.
@yahoo.com.
@yahoo.com.
That's Bill Thorpe
Golf.
Golf Classic.
Oh, one, keep going, and then @yahoo.com.
@yahoo.com.
Okay, that's one. That sounds good.
What about the NAACP website?
Now, the NAACP website,
yeah.
Get this. It's Chapel Hill. It's kind of long, so just make sure you can get this. It's Chapel Hill - Carborough - NAACP.org.
That's not too bad.
All right. It's just long, but it's kind of simple. It's Chapel Hill.
Carborough.
No, Chapel Hill - Carborough
-
NAACP.org.
Okay, so listeners, you've got two ways to follow up on this and find out more about it. This sounds like a really exciting idea. It sounds like one that's going to be hard to get these people to the table, but... an election year is always a good time that they're a little more responsive than they are at other times for the politicians. And we'll have to see about all these CEOs and things. But I'm hoping that we can get this going. Okay, this is WCOMFM.org. WCOMFM.org. This is Lori Hoyt, your host, Dick Paddock, our engineer. William Thorpe, our guest, And this is Wilp's Wake Up Call. Have a good day.